Good day to everyone. Evening, morning, whatever it is. It's actually along the same lines of the share we gave a few weeks ago, discussing the archaeological and historical evidence pertaining to the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. And as Rav Kornblatt Friedrich and Rosh Kollel explained, we're going to talk about the different forms of Avodah Zarah mentioned in the Gemara and what we can see from archaeological evidence. I'm going to start again with a brief reminder of the historical sequence of events in Eretz Yisrael from the second Beis Hamikdash until later period, because that's going to play an important role in understanding the archaeological finds. The second Beis Hamikdash, of course, the Jews ruled the country, and once again, I'm going to use the civil dates because they're more convenient. In the year 63 BCE, the Romans captured the country, and they controlled the country. During the Second Beis Hamikdash period, the Second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed around 68-70 Common Era, as Machlokes Rashi tells us in the Gemara of Avodah in the first barak. And then the Romans controlled the country. The Jews had lost their independence. The Romans were pagans. They worshipped Avodah Zarah. And this continued on until the beginning of the 4th century, approximately the year 325. During that period, in the year 200, was when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi compiled the Mishnah. So most of the things appearing in the Mishnah reflect on what was in the days of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. From the year 325 and on, the Roman Empire became Christian. And when the Roman Empire became Christian, there was a major change. Until then, the Christians were persecuted by the Romans, and we may have a chance to refer to that in the Gemara also to see. They were persecuted by the Romans. The Jewish religion was a legal religion, while Christianity was an illegal religion. The people were tortured to death. And from then on, Christianity became the religion of the Roman Empire. And that's when the Jews started suffering even more. The Byzantine era continued, let's say roughly until the year 638, because in the year 615 the Persians captured the country, but the Byzantines captured back in the year 630, and in 638 the Muslims came and captured the country, and the Muslims controlled the country until the Crusaders came in 1099. Crusaders came, left, and came back again. The Crusaders were ousted in the year, finally announced in the year 1219 by the Mamluks, which were also Muslims. So this is the basic structure, the historical structure of what happened to Eretz Yisrael in that time. Instead, the difference between the Roman period and the Byzantine period, although it's the same people, but the difference is major that until then the Romans were pagans, worshiping idols, and from then on Christianity became the official religion. There are no more pagans, but a lot of the pagan habits, a lot of the pagan holidays were incorporated into Christianity. And maybe we'll have time to focus on that too, but the Avodah Zarah is no longer being worshipped. And one of the things that we're going to try to discuss today is how, what the halacha applies then and today when these things mentioned in the Gemara are no longer Avodah Zarah. Now since we're Rafiyom is holding already past afternoon, as I was going to start today with the Sigis and Daf Nun. Daf Nun in the Gemara Avodah Zarah is talking about the Avodah Zarah Merkulis. If we go to our sources that we have, you know, the PDF source, I'm bringing it up, the PDF source, that's source number one. We go to source number one. We have source to bring it up. We have a section where we have a couple of quotes on Mansilukas, which is section 7.1 and 7.2. But this goes back to the Mishnah in the beginning of the fourth parak. Rabbi Shmuel says, Shalosh avonim zubitzad zubitzad makulis asuras. The stones found near the makulis are also forbidden. Now, what is makulis? On that nun, and this source you have in the PDF file, the PDF file, source 7.1, quick quote, Eloi Navne Bezkulis, These are the stones of Eshkulis. Achas Mikan, Va'achas Mikan, Va'achas Al-Gabeh. And Markulis is two stones side by side and one on top of them. This is Markulis, and the way of worshipping Markulis was kind of a strange way. The people had the custom to throw stones at the Markulis. This was the way of worshipping the Markulis. The Gemara even says in Sanhedrin that if a person throws a stone on Markulis, even if his intention is to insult the Markulis by stoning it, he's still guilty of worshipping Avodah Zarah, because this is the custom, this is the way to worship the Avodah Zarah. The Gemara goes on, and this is source number 7-2. The Gemara goes on to tell a story. The place of the Yanai king was destroyed. Out of the Kechavim, Okimu Bei Markulis. Goyim came and established a Markulis in that place where Yanai lived. Out of the Kechavim Machlimi, the Lo Pochel Markulis. Came a different group of Goyim that did not worship Markulis. Shaklinu, Vechipu Behem Drachim Startoks. They took these stones that have been used, that have been thrown out to Markulis, and they took these stones and they used them to pave roads. Ikar Rabbanan the Parsha. Some Rabbanan refused to walk on these roads because since these stones were used for Markulis, they are also Banah, and therefore some Rabbanan just refused to walk on these roads. Ikar Rabbanan the Lo Parsha. And some Rabbanan held that it was okay, it was permissible. And the Gemara continues. Amar Yochanan. The Nanshah Kadosh and Malach Aleim, Raman Nifosh Mehem, we have a first person is called Benanshah Kadosh, the son of the holies. As the Gemara explains, who is this? This is Rabbi Nachum, Rabbi Simai. He's a person who never even looked at an image on a coin. And we'll get to that later on too, about the images on coins. But in other words, he was a person who was very mocked not to benefit from a Avodah Zarah. And if he felt that it's permissible to walk on these stones that have been originally come from Markulis and now are used as a pavement, then if he held it permissible, then there's no reason why we should be mocked. We're trying to understand archaeologically, historically, what this Markulis is. If you go to the sources, if you go back to the main source page, number 15, we have a statue in Avodah Zarah called, number 15, Avodah Zarah called Mercury. And it's a small, okay, this is a small statue of Mercury. This has been found part of a shipwreck near the Haifa Bay. And that's a miniature statue of 12 centimeters. And this is a statue of a god called Mercury, which is very common. And many, the name Markulis resembles the god of Mercury, and that's why many suggest that we're talking about the god of Mercury. The problem with this is that Mercury is a very known god. Wednesday represents the day of the god of Mercury, and there are very few historical records that can back any evidence of worshipping that people worship this Avodah Zarah by throwing stones at it. Now, the stories of Chazal are not something that happened years before then. These stories happened in their lifetime. The worshipping of Markulis by throwing stones was, as we see from the Gemara Sanhedrin, it was a common thing. It was a real thing. It was not a thing that it was hearsay that something happened many years before that. So it's kind of hard to identify. It's kind of hard to identify Markulis with Mercury. So I'm going to come up with a suggestion. The truth of the matter is, this isn't my. I'm not the first one to suggest it, but I am the first one to, to bring proof to the connection. And if you go back to the source page, I'd like you to go to graphic number 11 on the source page. And this is graphic number 11. Can you bring it up? It's going to take a. Okay, it's black and white. I'm going to give it a couple seconds to come up. And okay, we have this picture over here, which can definitely qualify as a Markulis. This is the thing called a dolmen. This picture was taken in the Golan Heights. A dolmen is a combination of two words in some foreign language, which means a stone table. Dolmen. Dolls a table, and man is stone. A stone table. Now these things, there are hundreds of these that are found in Eretz Yisrael. They're found all along the Syrian-African Rift, which means all the way up to Syria, the Jordan River, the Golan Heights, all the way down to Jordan. Plenty of these dolmens have been found, and different sizes and shapes, but the basic idea is here. And as you see in this picture, which I showed you, it's two stones and one on top. Now, there's not the only way they're found. Some of them are found covered with a lot of stones, and another thing that they have around them is that they have a circle usually surrounding this area. In other words, they're surrounded in an enclosure, a stone enclosure, as if like to mark off a territory of the city. One of these dolmens, to date, they've been some of them have been excavated and found to be burial sites from the Bronze Age, which means that's it from the time of the Elvasanar. They've been reused or whatever. As I said, plenty of them have been found. I don't have the number, but throughout the Levant, which means throughout the years of Tanakh, these things have been found. Now let's learn a little more in Chazal what they say about Makulis, and let's see if we can identify this properly with the Makulis, not just by the fact that we have two stones and a stone on top. So, one, I think the Gemara over here gives us a clue when the Gemara says that the stones were dismantled from the Makulis, and what did they use them for? They used them to cover the roads. Okay, I'll ask a question, which might seem like a stupid question, don't laugh too hard, but like, why did they use them for roads? Why did they use them for houses or something like that? As I said, it's a stupid question, but it's not a stupid question, because you find some very interesting sources in Chazal, which I didn't put up for you, but one is a very interesting Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi on the Gemara over here says, Eidei Makulis, it's not here, it's for us, Eidei Makulis, Koshu Sag Es Hayom Bes Hadrochim. What is a Makulis? A Makulis is something that Sag the Yam of the Drachim. I'm not going to go into the whole explanation, but Nei Moshe has an explanation, but in my humble opinion, the word Sag usually means to fence off. The Sayeg in the Mishnah, it means to fence off. So in other words, the Yerushalmi is telling us that a Makulis is something that marks off the territory of the ocean and the roads. So there we see the connection between Makulis and roads. We have another source, and this source also I did not put up, but it's in Torah's Kohen and Pashas Bahar. On the Pasuk, the end of Pashas Bahar, Losasu Lachem Elilim, Ufasa Lamatevo Losakimu Lachem. Don't put up any statues, don't put up any Matevos. So the Torah's Kohen says, Losakimu, don't stand them up, Ela HaMakulis Shalgabe HaDrochet. The Torah's Kohen says that it's referring to the Makulis which are by the roads. So in other words, we find two or three sources over here that the definition, that the location of a Makulis is near a road. In other words, the Gemara tells us that they use the stones to pave the road, and the Yerushalmi says clearly that a Makulis is only to mark the territory of the road, and so the Torah Kohanim. Furthermore, there's a very interesting Tosefta. The Baisa and Tosefta and Avodah Zarah here, I think Perek Zayin says, that if you move the Makulis from its original location, it is no longer awesome. Now we have to understand exactly how that halachically can be, but what seems that Yerushalmi is saying is that the Makulis has a particular location along the road, and if you move it from there, it already does not function as a Makulis. I don't have an answer exactly why, but that seems to be what Yerushalmi is saying. Now what does this have to do with all these domains that I mentioned? In the new archaeological encyclopedia of excavations in the Enshu domain, there's a whole write-up about all those that have been found and the different types, which, as I said, the basic idea of two stones and a stone on top is there, and they're trying to understand who's buried in these dolmens, where they are, and whatever. And the only connection that they could find is that all these dolmens are sitting near major roads. That's the only connection that they can find. That's the only thing, the only common denominator among all of them is that the dolmens are sitting on major roads. Take a look at source number 12, and there it's another dolmen, but this one is more I just want to mention that some of these pictures are actually copyrighted, and I even posted on top a warning that they're only here, you know, for use just for this year, and copyrighted material. So this is another picture from that encyclopedia, and in the center you can see those stones, And around it, you see a whole pile of stones. In other words, there's a central figure, which we showed you before, with the two stones and stones on top, and one stone on top. But that is not the only, that is after everything has been peeled away. An original dome that is found is covered with a pile of stones around it, and as I told you, in a small circular area surrounding the area of the dome. So that fits, that very much fits the idea that the Marculis, that at least the dome, you know, had two stones with a stone on top, and a lot of stones are piled up on top of it. This doesn't necessarily contradict the fact that these things were burial sites. One of two possibilities can be, A, either it could be that these places were made holy and therefore some people prefer to be buried in this holy site, and the other possibility is just the opposite, is that these places were made holy based on people who were buried there, and the form of worship evolved around that. So that's really, as I said, you know, that's really, I don't think we can ever know or ever answer that question, but it doesn't necessarily contradict the fact that these things predate the predate. It would be very hard to identify a thing as Marculis unless we'll find a big sign that was up there one day and said the word Marculis. Without that, we can't identify. And the statue of an Avodah Zarah, if it's found, we know exactly what the statue looked like, and we can identify it. But we can't just a pile of stones, anyone goes in Golan Heights, or dozens, hundreds of piles of stones of all sorts and shapes, and it'd be very hard to exactly identify which one was used for Marculis. But these dolmens, which appear, now this is a common thing in the Levant, they do not appear too much. From what I know, they don't appear like in places like Rome or whatever sources to refer to such a thing. But common in Eretz Yisrael and the area, the Marculis, and as I approve, the fact it's sitting on the road and the fact that it has an area around it, which fits with what the Gemara says over here with Rabbi Shmuel, that there's an area, a shpisalo, meaning that there's an area surrounding the Marculis, which has something to do with the Marculis. So we can definitely suggest that the Marculis and the Dolmen are the same thing. Okay, we'll go now. We mentioned in the same Gemara, Benon Chokadoshim, Mahalach Aleim, the Gemara refers to Benon Chokadoshim, the son of the Holy One, and that is who Rabbi Nachman Bar Samai, that he didn't look at the image of a coin. Now, the image of a coin can contain two things. It can contain the image of the emperor or person, which is also a problem. And we're going. This is what we're leading up to, going back to the Gemara on. You know what? Let's go. In the source. Let's go to back to our PDF source number one, and we have a section. Over there, called Aphrodite, and the PDF source with the Hebrew text, source number 10.1. The Gemara tells a story over here of Rabbi Gamliel, who was bathing in the bathhouse in Akko. And in the bathhouse, there was a statue of Aphrodite. Now, Rashi already refers to this. If you really look at the PDF source, I sent you to source also at that spot. I sent you to source number 2.1, where that's the Gemara of Daf Tezayin. The Gemara says that you're permitted to build, bathhouses for a guy. However, once you reach the kippah, you reach the dome where they place the Avodah Zarah, that's forbidden. And this fits in, and Rashi says, which Avodah Zarah did they put in the bathhouse? They put the Avodah Zarah of Aphrodite. Now, that, of course, Rashi is based on this Gemara over here, which we just mentioned in Mandalah Ram Beis, where Rabbi Gamliel was in the bathhouse in Akko, and he buried in this bathhouse where there was a statue of Aphrodite, was the statue of Avodah Zarah. So Proclus comes to Rabbi Gamliel and says, how can you bathe? If this is a place of Avodah Zarah, then you are forbidden from benefiting from Avodah Zarah. And for that, Rabbi Gamliel answered, he says, Ani lo basi b'gvula, hi bar b'gvula. In other words, as he explains, in other words, the house is not, the merchot, the bathhouse, is not to honor Aphrodite, but just the opposite. On the contrary, this is a bathhouse. And they put in a statue of Aphrodite in order to make the bathhouse more important. But it's not really built, it's not a house of Avodah Zarah that's built to honor Aphrodite. If you go back to our source page, source number 14, I have over here a coin with Aphrodite. It's a small coin depicting a statue of Aphrodite. I'll tell you a secret. This coin was minted none other in the city of Akko. Now, the cities in Eretz Yisrael, like other cities, when the Romans wanted to honor a city, they gave permission to mint coins. They minted their own coins, not important coins, but copper coins and stuff like that, which usually had had a symbol of the city. The gods of the city were usually put on the coin. Produce from the city was put on the coin. It was a way of PR, public relations. Now, this coin was minted in Akko, and on it is the statue of Aphrodite. It should not be surprising once you see that from our Gemara, that runs a real bathe in Akko, in a bathhouse, and had a statue of Aphrodite. You can assume that was one of the gods of the city over there. So, first of all, if you take a look at this, you know, we see on the left, you see an image of a person, and on the right, you see the image of the Avodah Zarah. And Rabbi Nachum of Shimai was careful not to look at an image. Now, there's two. There can be an image of a human being, which is the image on the left, which can be a problem. But that's less of a problem, because any image of a human being on a coin is half an image. And when it's half an image, it's less of a problem. Hashach and others are matzah. It's important to note that for Eretz Yisrael is like one of the only countries in the world today that mints coins that do not have human images on it because of this issue. They don't have them protruding. There's pictures. There are pictures, but not protruding from the coin. That's why the coins do not have human images on them. And then there's the Avodah Zarah. And that's the issue. Menachem of Shemai was so mocked not to have any connection to Avodah Zarah that he refused to even look at the image of a coin. The question is, how were other people? Now, it seems he was very machmir, but other people looked at the image of a coin. How were they permitted? So that already tells us, and tells us in Shabbos, where Sam Gemara tells us that the Issa of looking at the Avodah Zarah is only an Avodah Zarah that's been worshipped. But if an Avodah Zarah has not been worshipped, there's no Issa. So this coin has not been worshipped as an Avodah Zarah. It's symbolic to Avodah Zarah. But we don't expect that people worship this coin to say. They worship the Avodah Zarah, and the coin depicts which Avodah Zarah was available in that town. And therefore, there's no Issa in looking at it, except for Menachem Rav Shimai, who was more makpid, and he would not even look at the image of the coin. We're going to continue going backwards in the Gemara, and we're going to go in the PDF source. Time is short. We're going to have another very interesting subject. We're going to go back on the PDF page sources, the section Images of the Sun and Moon. Let's start with 6.1, which is part of the mission of what is Zardak and Base. Hamoti Kalim, a person who finds Kalim vessels. Valeim Tzuras Chamo, Tzuras Levana, Tzuras Da'akom, Yulichem Yamanach. A person who finds vessels that have the image of the sun, or the image of the moon, or the image of the dragon, then these will probably worship, and he must destroy them by throwing them into the Yam HaMelech, into the Dead Sea. Now, interesting, Rashi already tells us Tzuras Chama, and I was one would think, Tzuras Chama means the image of the sun. But Rashi tells us no. Rashi says Mazal Chama. The Mazal of the sun, meaning something representing the sun, but not the sun itself. Now this idea is also brought in the Rambam and in the Bartanura. If you look at the same source, the PDF, the Hebrew text source 6.4, of course, the Shulchan Aruch, Yerodei Kuf Mem Aleph, Hamot Tekelim, Valen Tzuras Chama Ulevana. If a person finds Kelim that have on them the image of the sun and moon, and the Ramah explains, the Ainu Tzuras Hamasim Veshem Chama Ulevana. It doesn't mean the image of the sun and or the moon. It means images which represent the sun or the moon. Kemo sha'osim ba'alei ha'talsamos. So, kigon tzuras ha'mashachos v'shemesh. When they want to make an image that represents the sun, mitzayim melech mu'tar, they draw a king who is decorated, like a crown, yoshev al ha'gola, sitting in a chariot. That is the image of the sun. וכן כיוד פירת בזבל לבון, and likewise with the wound, yes, I'm serving you chedus. That's how the Rambam and the Bartanura, and as we saw from Rashi, also alludes to that, that that is the image of the sun. It doesn't mean actually the image of the sun, but it's an image that represents the sun. Now the Gemara over here goes through the whole sugya, the story of what's permissible in having images and what's not, and it tells the Bimbis that Rav Gamliel, for example, had images of the moon in his aliyah, in his attic. When people came to testify that they've seen the new moon for Rosh Chodesh, he would ask them how they saw it, and those that weren't able to describe it, he'd show them from the charts, did it look like this or did it look like that, and this way he'd be able to detect whether or not they were telling the truth and whether or not it's Rosh Chodesh. And the Gemara goes through a whole issue over here, how Rav Gamliel was permitted to have these images when you're not allowed to make all these images. The conclusion of the Gemara, and Daf Mem Gimel on the base, is the Gemara says, Acher Masulo, Goyim made it for him, and since Goyim made it for him, it was permissible. Now, the Gemara says that even when it's protruding, and there's a problem with Chashad, people might suspect that he's using it for Avodah Zarah, but the conclusion of Gemara is that if it's a place of robbing, if it's a place of a lot of people coming, then there's no Chashad that the masses are worshipping Avodah Zarah, and then it's permissible. Now this is a very interesting Gemara, because as we mentioned, when the Byzantine period came, all these pagan symbols actually stopped meaning Avodah Zarah. And they stopped meaning of Avodah Zarah, and that's where the Shulchan Aruch has all discussions, what they mean today. And one of the fascinating things is that in archaeological excavations, in shuls, in Eretz Yisrael, we find some strange things which we would not expect to find in a shul. If we let them go to back to our original source page, source number 2, and then you can actually go on. Take a look at source number 2. This is an image of a mosaic floor which was found in a shul in a kibbutz called Beit Alpha. This was discovered in the 1920s, and this is the floor of a shul. Now let me just a little history of the Byzantine period. The shuls before the Byzantine period were usually built in massive structures. The massive structures survived. The floors were not basically too significant, and the massive structures survived. For example, when you have a chance, not now, you take a look at source number 13, have a picture of the shul of Bar'am. The shul of Bar'am, source number 13, shows you the facade of the shul, which is in situ, which means this is the way it was found, this is the way it was, and it's been standing for 1,600 years. I might take a drop to load. Let's have a fast connection. This is the facade of a shul. The floor did not survive. A lot of money went to the shul to make it the largest building, the nicest building of the community, and that was the shul in that period. The later period, when the Byzantines came, they started persecuting the Jews, and they started making a lot of rules against the Jews, and one of the rules they made was that you're not allowed to build shuls. Now it seems to start, although that was the law, but people somehow were able to bypass the law and build shuls nonetheless. But something changed. Instead of building these massive structures, which are pretty evident, blatant, the people built simple buildings, but a lot of money went into decorating the floor of the shul. And the floors were made with mosaics. Now, what was shown in this mosaic is an interesting thing. Because, if let's say we would go into mosaics from the time of Second Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, there's the Herodian Quarter in the Old City, Masada, other places which have mosaics from the times of the Second Beit HaMikdash, there are no living beings on these mosaics. They all have geometrical designs. The Jews, of course, I'm not talking about the classical architecture, which has plenty of all types of over the Zaras and mythological creatures, but in the Jewish mosaics, all there are is just geometrical designs. Plant life, no living beings whatsoever. Again, this is a pattern which any Jewish place on the Second Beit HaMikdash is a pattern that repeats itself. However, when these, we'll go back to the Beit Alpha Shul, which you can bring up, one for a second again. This is a mosaic floor of a shul from the Byzantine period. We even know the date because on the bottom is the description of people who donated it. It's in the 6th century, and this is not uncommon. This is not uncommon. This now don't read it because it's in Greek. This is not uncommon. The mosaic has three sections. The top section shows an Aron Kodesh with two lions, which is a very old motif, which exists this very day. You have Lulavim. The bottom section depicts Avraham Avinu going to the Akedah with Yitzchak on the right side. You see in the Mizbeach, the flames, and Yitzchak tied up, and in the back of him you see the goats. There's even, it's hard to see from this picture, but even the sign says, Al Tishlach, the Malach is saying, don't put your hands to the Na'ar. And back you see two in the arm with the donkey. So that's the Kedah Yitzchak, which again is a change because you see human beings depicted. But the centerpiece is actually the most problematic. If you want to see it better, take it to source number 4, where there's a straight, take it to source number 4, where there's a straight view of this, there's a straight view of this center part of the mosaic, and we'll see how problematic this becomes. The center of this mosaic, give a chance to bring it up. As you can see over here, there's two very interesting things, two parts. Well, you have, first of all, what's clearly depictable, and everyone will notice right away, is the 12 zodiac symbols with the names in Hebrew. Around it, you have the four seasons of the year. Now, the four seasons in Hebrew are basically go by the name of the first month where the season begins. So spring, well, now we scoop up Nisan. Tzkufas Tammuz is the summer, Tzkufas Tishrei is autumn, and Tzkufas Teves is the winter. So that's number one. This is a problem because here we have the images of the zodiac, which is also also of the halacha, since I'm asking to have them more than one, is a problem. What's even more problematic is the centerpiece. And the centerpiece is a Greek god, Helios, the god of the sun, riding a quadruple of horses. Exactly the way the Rambam describes what the Tzuras Chama is. The Tzuras Chama is a king who is decorated. You see like a sun crown around his head. And Rochev Alagola riding on a chariot. And that's exactly the Tzuras Chama. Beyond doubt, this is the Tzuras Chama. There's no doubt that the Rambam was familiar with it. And we see that this thing appears in a shul. It appears in a shul. This is not unique. It appears in a shul in Beit Alpha. It appears in a shul in Beit Sha'an. They were done, incidentally, by the same craftsman. And it also, similar, appears in the mosaic in Tzibori, which is source number 5, although it's a little hard to see it because it did not survive in such a great, it did not survive the condition of Beit Alpha. It's a fascinating, the condition of Beit Alpha survived pretty much complete. While the one at Tipari, the shul, which was been found a few years ago, a lot of it is missing. But the same idea of the zodiac symbol appears, and the same idea of the zodiac symbol appears over there. As I said, it's pretty hard to see. In the center, though, instead of having a king riding, you actually have the sun rising itself. But the basic, the same idea, the zodiac, the symbols, which, of course, are a problem. Now, it's very hard to, when I come to Paschal and Lachman from archaeology, let's make that clear. But the question, I take people there on a tour, that's the question, is what is this? Is this a shul or is it not a shul? But these things are definitely a shul. And period, these shuls existed. When the Mongols captured the country, they destroyed all the images that were on such shuls. And in shuls like in Aran, which is near Yericho, which was a shul existing in the Byzantine period, these images have been defaced. And in the shul in Susia, south of Hebron, a new floor was paved, a new mosaic floor was placed with geometrical designs above the existing floor with the zodiac symbol. We know this because the edge of the zodiac symbol survived, so we know that it's been covered over probably in the Muslim period. In the Yericho shul, which you have no access to today, the Yericho shul is a later shul and it was built in the Islamic period. And the Jews did not live in Yericho during the Byzantine period. We know this from Shemitah. And it was built in the Islamic period. And there again, there are none of these symbols. So how was this done? Again, if we'll take a look at the Shulchan Aruch basically says, there's a whole discussion. But once again, we saw in the Gemara that the Gemara says, "Mashal Rab Mishayni, in Gedishul, which is source number six." What's interesting about the Gedishul is that it doesn't have the symbols, but it has the names. It has the names Tishrei Cheshvan and the symbols of the zodiac appear there, but it doesn't have the images. Perhaps these people, perhaps again, the suggestion, were more careful and did not want to bring in these images. But once again, we saw from the Gemara that in a place of Rabin, in a place where the majority of people come, there's no Hashat. So that could be more lenient. Especially if here it's not bolet, it's not protruding, it's just a drawing. And if it's just a drawing, everybody needs to be lenient. Especially nowadays, that these things do not serve as a Avodah Zarah. And if they don't serve as a Avodah Zarah, evidently these people were more lenient. Again, we do not paskin halachic shadows from archaeology. We don't know what that is. Community was. But this is a general idea of what the people were thinking. There's a very interesting document which has been found in the Cairo Geniza. In the Cairo Geniza, they stored away documents from hundreds of years during the Middle Ages. Again, we don't pass on halacha from archaeology, and there's no way of knowing what halacha status this document had when it was thrown into the Geniza. But one of the documents is a document from Provost. It's called Hilchot Eretz Yisrael Min HaGeniza. And over here it has the Isser of bowing down on a stone floor. In the early days, people could not bow down on a stone floor except in the Beis HaMikdash. Because as we say, in the Beis HaMikdash, you're allowed to bow down on a stone floor, but not outside. However, but today, that there's no longer Avodah Zarah, one may bow down on a stone floor in a place that's designated for tefillah. So here we see the concept. Again, and we're not coming to Paschal any halachic shilas, but we see the concept that the things have changed, and once the people are not worshipping Avodah Zarah, one may, for example, bow down on a stone floor. It could be that people saw these things as decorative ornaments, saying since they don't serve any of the Zohar anymore, so therefore it can be permissible to make these designs in a shul. So then, as I said, we're not coming to Paskin, but this definitely reflects the end of the era of Avodah Zarah, and once there's no longer Avodah Zarah, these things even made their way to shul. As I say, it was ousted in the Muslim period because they were ousted in the Muslim period